Welcome to Careers in Discovery, your window into the world of leaders in pharma and biotech. Brought to you by Singular Talent, making hiring better for organizations involved in drug discovery and R&D. Yulia Lampe is the Chief Scientific Officer of Coding Bio, a company born in the pandemic who are using AI to advance cell therapies for cancer. Yulia joined us to talk about cellular machines and why they could hold the key to targeting solid tumors, building a company around her life rather than the other way around, and achieving balance as a scientist. This week, I'm delighted to be joined by Yulia Lampe. Yulia, welcome to Careers in Discovery.
Thank you. I'm so honored.
Oh, we're really, really pleased to have you. So Yulia, I always start by talking a bit about the work that you're doing now. And currently you're Chief Scientific Officer at Coding Bio. Really interested to hear more about the work you're doing there and about AI for cell therapy.
Well, I guess in short, we're building cellular machines. but we're starting out with CAR Ts because the immune cell really lends itself nicely to modification. And CAR Ts have been around for 10 years. And so Carl June just published a paper stating that his cells against CD19 are still there. And that is really quite amazing. And so, so we're starting with chimeric antigen receptors as modifying molecule for T cells.
Yes.
But we will move beyond this particular oncotargets into other modalities and other cell types. But yeah, we've been able to, in the year and a half, to build a very easy platform to screen these receptors. And we have boxes of amazing efficacious molecules now. So very, very, very happy with
that. No, it's good to see. And I suppose, as you say, CAR T is a good place to start given the amount of data and research that's available already, which of course, if you're applying computational approaches, more data is usually better. But tell us a bit about the AI element of it. So is that to do with the screening of the receptors?
At the moment, yes. Yeah. So we're building a nice learning set for the machine learning to kind of figure out what's good and what's not good, and being able to differentiate from the transcriptome what to look for in a good CAR, let's say, or a CAR T, rather. But we do hope to move into prediction of good molecules. So we can, instead of starting with the lab work and then providing the sets of data, we would like to have the computer predict a particular sequence and then test it in the lab to see if it actually works. And so that's kind of the flow that we're aiming for eventually.
Yeah, it makes sense. So hopefully that would be a much more efficient way to do things, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think AI in general is not quite there yet, but it just takes time to accumulate the data and the data that we currently feed into it is all in-house data. So, yeah.
Yes. Yeah. There's a couple of things I wanted to pick up on from what you've talked about there. So I'll come back to this idea of building cellular machines, because just that description alone is fascinating. And I'm sure we can talk about that for most of this interview. AI in drug discovery, of course, has been popular for a number of years now and has been successful in a number of applications. And we're starting to see clinical efficacy of AI developed molecules. And that's really great to see that progress. As you've said, it's not 100% there in terms of, I guess, being able to solve the problem of cancer or the problem of disease. I mean, you're coming at it from a particular angle, but any thoughts on AI as a whole in drug discovery and where the field is at, and I guess why why this approach for you? There's a lot of questions.
Yeah. When we started, AI was hot. And it still is. And using that particular module is logical, right?
Yeah.
You have computers analyzing vast amounts of data to figure out what, I guess in our case, is the efficacy. Can you link the definition of efficacy to a particular signature in transcriptome? And I think the more data we provide for machine learning, the better it gets. It constantly refines itself. So
yes,
I think it's an incredible tool for humanity at this point, just because of the amount of data that it's able to process and figure out where to go from there.
Yeah, I suppose the pace of learning in machine learning is so high, right? It's not that sort of pattern recognition wouldn't be possible for a person to do, but the rate at which an algorithm can get there is so much greater. It gives you the opportunity to really, I suppose, utilize the human intuition and human ability to make connections in a different way.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And then this idea of building cellular machines. So this is obviously broader than CAR-Ts, and this is a big, big topic. And I think, you know, it's something I'm starting to hear noises about in various different places. I don't think it's sort of perhaps mainstream yet, but people talking about programming computers being yesterday's news, programming biology being tomorrow's news, these sorts of concepts. Tell us a bit about your view on cellular machines and the approach you're taking to it and what that means to you guys.
So the way I see it is the immune system is doing this for us constantly. Our bodies are currently surveyed for any kind of abnormalities, and the cells that look abnormal are being taken care of, essentially. And it's any kind of oncological differences are detected and the cells are eliminated. So if we could target cells, because what cancer does is it hides from the immune system.
Yes. And
so the I guess the tumor arises when there's this concept of immune escape. So harnessing this power of T cells, cytotoxic T cells, has shown really great promise, where you can target a malignancy. We've gotten really good at doing liquid tumors,
right?
So kind of blood cancers, because the access to the malignant cells is just there.
Mm.
Whereas solid tumors are a lot more difficult to target, because of the tumor microenvironment and such. It's a complicated kind of issue. But the fact that we can program cells to target something very specifically,
yes,
is a really big step, because chemotherapy is really just poisoning of everything around. So it's not a targeted system.
No, absolutely.
Yeah, so the cellular machines in the context of oncotherapy are already there. I mean, we have said lots of T cells.
Mm-hmm.
But going beyond that, there's been a lot of talk around aging in general and
yes,
what happens to aging cells. If we're able to use the immune system to kind of scavenge anything that looks aged and abnormal, that's a really fabulous way of using the cellular machines, right? I think the Silicon Valley has been really into that. They've been funding a lot of companies that are addressing aging specifically. And so, yeah, I mean, macrophages can be engineered to scavenge tau or mm-hmm. anything neuro-related, kind of, neurodegenerative diseases. So, I think the possibilities are endless in that respect. Yes.
It's interesting. I think there is certainly signs, as you've said, that aging related or rejuvenation related research is gaining credibility, right? And is gaining traction and is no longer sort of the science fiction. It's real science now. And there's so many implications of that, both medical and otherwise.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, we all want to be as youthful as possible for as long as we can.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. So the other thing I was interested in is so your role as chief scientific officer, of course, in a I use this word in inverted commas for those who can't see, but in a traditional drug research environment, which is primarily wet lab and experimentation based, that person would be in charge of all of R&D and all of that would fall under their wing. What I was interested in a technology-driven and AI-driven drug discovery company, the scope of your role and the things you get most involved in and how that plays with the technology side of the business as well?
I'm a very much a hands-on person, mm-hmm. Kind of a nurturer. So I take active role in all the experimental work.
Yes.
And to be honest, we are very early stage, and so we don't have a lot of people. Simon and I do, we can basically take the process from the beginning to the very end.
Yeah.
Just the two of us. And that was always the goal of being able to do this, to know every part of the process really, really well. And we're very synergistic in that respect. So the actual title really doesn't mean anything. It's a mom and pop shop at this point. We are, if we were a flower shop, it'd be exactly the same.
Yeah.
So I would say my role at this point is making sure that we are meeting our monthly agenda, checking all the points, because the progress is kind of predetermined for us. We talk about it all the time. Being a husband and wife team, the science talk never stops, and that's how we like it.
No, of course.
So yeah, I would say, would I want to stay in the same role? I'm not sure. I think as long as I have access to the cell culture, where I can supervise all the experiments, I'm happy with whatever role I have in the company. But at this point, it is what it is.
Yeah, no, of course. You feel it's been important to really understand each step of the process in a very sort of hands dirty, practical sense.
Yeah, I think that's really important. I think the organic growth of the company really depends on the founders being deeply in touch with what happens with the platform.
Yes. Yeah. So you've touched on it there. I always like to talk about the origins of companies and how they start. I find it interesting. Hopefully the audience does as well. But you and Simon are a husband and wife team, as you say. And I think from our previous conversation, Yulia, the pandemic had quite a big influence on the company being formed. Can you tell us a bit about the origin of it, where it came from, the story of, I suppose, the creation of Coding Bio?
it all happened on the 30th floor of a high-rise building in White City. we've always played around with the idea of having something of our own. Mm-hmm. I think it was just the a lab for us is kind of a playground, and we both enjoy this aspect very, very much. and having the satisfaction of being in a lab is an important aspect for us. And so, yeah, we were looking for this independent lab environment where we didn't have to answer to anyone. It was just ours. And so we conceived the idea. We filed a patent, and we worked out the process from start to end. And yeah, we registered the company, and it all kind of happened within a few months of just sitting and thinking and working out every aspect of it. And then we found a place where we could do the lab work, and it happened to be in Oxford. We found a place to live right next to the lab. And it all just kind of fell into place. It was we were looking for that optimized lifestyle where we could really, we didn't want to travel to work because that takes a chunk of time. We just wanted to be able to pop into the lab. If it was a trailer in our backyard, that would have been great as well.
But
the paperwork would have been really crazy.
It would, yes.
And so, yeah, we are very satisfied with how things turned out. The facility here is great. The people that we interact with on a daily basis are amazing. It's, it's at Brooks University here in Oxford. Big shout out to OET, the Oxford Expression Technologies. They've been very, very helpful to us. They're a spin out from Brooks. That occupies the same space as us. And the equipment that we share with them is phenomenal. So we're very
And so it was really driven by this sort of appeal of intellectual freedom and being able to, I suppose, build a company around your life and build your life around the, and you know, these things
go both ways,
of course, but.
Because COVID introduced this flexibility, I guess. People realize that your 9-to-5 does not have to be that way.
Yeah.
You have to be just always present with our careers, I guess, the way scientists are. We do a lot of work on site with our hands. And so being able to to have the freedom to pop in anytime and do experiments is an important aspect to us. We also found ourselves while working for a company at the time, going in on weekends all the time because we like the process of discovery, the process of doing experiments, and it's a very satisfying thing when you when things work. And it's not always the case in science, so the that feeling of satisfaction is greater when it does work.
Absolutely. The best description I've had of this was on an early episode of this podcast, actually, and they said that bench science, let me get this right, bench science is essentially long periods of desperation punctuated by brief glimpses of insight, which I thought was a fabulous description of what that existence is like. And every scientist I've repeated that to has nodded in acknowledgement of that.
I completely agree. But the success is that much sweeter when it does happen.
Absolutely. And I suppose to your point around flexibility, I guess there's always been a case in both experimental science and I would imagine in machine learning applications where there's periods of really frantic activity or intense activity, and then there's periods of waiting for things to ferment or things to run their course or things to come to the point where you can do something with them, right? So I guess cutting out commuting has allowed you to work around that, I would imagine. And I suppose there was this concept that if you had to stay late to finish an experiment or you had to come in at the weekend to finish an experiment, that was just what you had to do, but it was on top of the 9-to-5. Whereas I do think there's more of an appreciation that it's hard to do science as a 9-to-5 job in a lot of businesses, which has been accelerated by the pandemic, of course. And so you came up with the concept, you went about sort of planning how to do it, and got started. And I'm sure there's more to it than that, of course. You are, I guess, officially about 18 months in, is that right?
Yeah.
Give or take. How similar is the business now to the plan that you originally put in place?
How similar? I would say it's on track. Is that silly to say? But it is.
No.
We set out set up this platform, and it works out really, really well. The purpose is really straightforward. And I would even go as far as to say sort of easy. it's knowing when to take a break for us at this point is the key. But the business itself, I guess I speak of the business as science being the meat of it, but there's a lot of aspects around the business that Simon takes care of. I guess there's stressful periods
fundraising
and such, and making sure that your BD is on track and communicating with people effectively, conveying the essence of what we're trying to do.
Yeah.
All of these things are, a little bit difficult, but we're learning. This is, we have to give ourselves a break in kind of saying, okay, we're scientists, we're bench scientists that are running a company, and it's our first one. And we are learning. And it's been exciting, I would say.
And I think that's a really good point to make. I think if you're not learning while running a company, you're probably not being particularly ambitious around what you're doing, even if you've got lots of experience running businesses. If you're not doing something new, then, you know, I don't want to say what's the point, because that's reductive, but, you know, there is, it's often the case that you're learning as you go, I think, even with lots of business experience. Have there been things that have been particularly surprising to you about starting or running a company that you didn't expect?
Surprising.
And didn't prepare you for that question, so I apologize.
I guess for me, I just assumed that everyone would be really excited about getting our molecules into patients. But there's a lot of discussion around, you know, where the business is going and how to I guess there's that presentation, there's that appeal, or social media driven, I guess almost influencer type stuff that I did not anticipate as much.
Yeah.
I guess. So yeah, there's a bit of fluff, I just have to focus on the science, and Simon takes care of the fluff. I don't know if it's politically correct to say that it's fluff, but yes, I understand that a business is an important aspect of a tech business.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Would he describe it as fluff, do you think?
No, well, it's a lot of effort.
Yeah,
there's much efforting, and all we want to do is be in the lab, and it's about.
Of course, yeah.
So that's kind of, you have to divide your energy into things that you really like to do, and then some things that you don't love doing, but it's just part of the business that needs to be. Yeah.
I think as well, it's harder now than it's ever been to get people's attention about anything, whether that's a scientific endeavor or a new business or anything at all, really. We see in recruitment as well. I think, you know, social media has leveled the playing field in a lot of really positive ways, from a marketing point of view, but has contributed to there being a lot more noise in everybody's life. I think that there's been so much funding available for companies over the last few years, that some have more valid ideas than others. And so there are more companies, there's always record numbers of companies being started all the time across all sectors year on year. We may see a downward trend on that this year, I'm not sure yet, but it'd be the first time for a while. And so I think that battle for attention, even if you've got the best idea in the world, it's just the opportunity for someone to actually listen to it and pay attention to it is much harder to come across than it has been before. Your audience is potentially bigger, but your ability to engage that audience, I think, is more challenging than it ever has been. So no, I understand what you mean. You sort of you have an idea that you know is a great idea. And there is sometimes an assumption that everybody else is going to realize this is a great idea as well. But it's not necessarily that they don't. They just it just hasn't entered their consciousness yet.
Yeah, perhaps.
Yeah. It's an interesting dynamic, I think, that people underestimate how difficult that promotional PR or mark, whatever you want to term it.
Marketing, yeah, absolutely. We have an intern, that's a marketing intern for us. And she opened up this whole new world to me where you learn every aspect of marketing in business school. And yeah. I had no idea that there were all these things that you could do to yourself. Bottom line to me was we have molecules that are performing better than what's out there right now. Mm. And they're just sitting there. It's a kind of a difficult concept to get my head around at this point, because the discovery process of CAR T or chimeric antigen receptors was kind of laborious for the longest time.
Of course, yeah.
And we've shortened it to 3 months, and we get tons of them that are efficacious. And so come and get them.
Yeah. Well, hopefully there's people listening to this who would like to come and get them. And I'm sure you'd be happy for them to get in touch if they are. I think that's the key thing, isn't it? Is you started with a good process and a good product, and then there is a lot of work to do in getting people to acknowledge it and see it and hear about it. But if fundamentally you have something good, then I'm sure that will come. It's just the work that goes into it is more laborious than people often want it to be. That's how it is. So we'll come back to Coding Bio, because I think there's probably more for us to talk about there. But I'm always interested as well in the reasons that people do the things they do more holistically. And I suppose in your case, that's biology and drug discovery more broadly. So tell me about, first of all, Yudhia, why science, why biology, why this path as a whole for you? Where did that career come from?
I was always a tinkerer. Like if you were a Disney character, I would be Tinkerbell. I don't know, tinkering with determination, I guess, is my drive. But I always knew I was going to be in science. I focused on biology specifically early on in high school. There was a program in my high school in Ottawa, Canada, where they did work placements for high school students to see. They were able to find a spot for, I guess it was a combination of, I was able to find a spot at the University of Ottawa Heart Institute.
Right.
There. And so I volunteered for 6 months just being in the lab. I liked the atmosphere. I liked doing things and see results. And it was just this type of environment that I felt really comfortable in. And from then on, it was just accumulation of skills or optimizing my skill sets, etc. So it wasn't so much a title or I could put on my CV saying, I was a director of. It was really how many things can I say that I can do comfortably in the lab, right, without having to rely on somebody else. So yeah, it was always going to be science, and here I am. Mm.
No, absolutely. So you started gaining that really practical experience very early on then. And was it always going to be drugs and therapeutics and health?
No, I mean, I was always curious about biomedical stuff, mm-hmm. but for me, just access to a lab that could give me some experience was good enough. And so I did my master's. I went through my undergraduate and master's at the University of Waterloo in Ontario. Mm-hmm. And that was in a plant biotechnology lab.
Yes.
And I learned how to clone. I learned all the skills that I use daily now. So the actual model organism is not as important if you're just building a set of skills that you are comfortable using. So, yeah. But when I had the opportunity to move into more human health mm-hmm. kind of direction, I took it. I was a trailing spouse after my master's for 5 years in the US, in New Jersey. And I could not work. I did not have a work permit.
Right.
So I found a volunteer position at a local, very small local hospital, where I sectioned in histology lab. They mm-hmm. had a section biopsies. The hours were terrible.
Yeah, I can imagine.
It was 5 to 8 a.m. Oh. I'm not an early riser, but it was really rewarding and really, really interesting. Because it was a small hospital, they had to do take care of everything that was coming in.
Yes.
One morning I came into the lab and there was a note saying that there's an amputated foot in the fridge that needs to be sectioned, which I thought was just amazing. And of course I had to. But yeah, I observed an autopsy because I had access to that. So yeah, if one word of advice, if you're really into it, volunteer your time.
Yeah.
Money is always great for your time, but I just could not work at that point. And so I was beefing up my CV essentially.
Yeah. And I suppose there is some real value in, you know, drug discovery and therapeutic research can be quite removed from human subjects and patients, right? And that's just the nature of it. But I suppose there's some real value in working in a hospital setting, for example, and being at the interface between the lab and the patient. I imagine there's some real lessons that you learn about human health and human physiology and the practical elements of that are valuable.
And I was always curious about it. So yeah, I'm well placed, I guess.
Yes. Yeah. And so I suppose looking back over the different things that you've done, I guess, you know, your academic work and the volunteer work that you did, and then we haven't talked even about the biotech company that you worked for and then the one that you've started. You've taken on, I suppose, you've worn different hats and you've worked on different types of projects, but there's always been this thread of being in the lab and being hands-on and being practical. What are the things as a scientist do you think that you have learned from a career point of view thus far? What are the most important things you wish you'd known when you started out?
As a scientist, I don't know, for me is really find your place of satisfaction. I don't know, I guess it's more of a person thing. If you find that you're dissatisfied, pivot. Mm-hmm. I think that's if the place that you're at is not meeting your expectations. Perseverance isn't going to help you move on. But yeah, in places like I think a PhD is an exercise and in being able to persevere.
Of course.
You can hope for a really, really rewarding project, but sometimes research does not work out that way. And your years of, just pipetting just do not pan out. But sticking with it and getting those letters, getting that degree is good. That's you walk out with that check mark and being able to go through the process and publish and move on. Just optimizing skills as a scientist. I would say the things that I focused on early on was maybe more academic, where you wanted to get published. And I can tell you right now that it's really not that important in this, in the setting that I'm in now.
Yes.
And so it's how you spend your energy, what you put your energy into. It's the outcome that you're going to get.
It's interesting. We speak to a lot of scientists who are making a transition from academia to industry, and that can be at various points in their career. And fairly regularly, we'll speak to someone that's very concerned that if they join such and such a company, they won't be able to publish anymore. And as you've touched on there, I think it's difficult sometimes for people to adjust their mindset to the fact that that is no longer the point. That's no longer how you keep score. But of course, there are other ways to have impact and progress in a company setting, right?
Yeah, And another thing I would say is don't focus on what title you're under. As long as I had access to the lab, I did not care whether I was a technician or if I had a little bit of freedom to engineer cells, for instance, which I did at KU Leuven, which is the Leuven University. Mm-hmm. And I had the freedom to engineer whatever I wanted if it was useful to the lab. And that was a really positive experience. I learned a lot from my bosses.
Yes.
So, don't focus on the title.
It sounds like, and this may be a hindsight thing, it may not be, but it sounds like you're very clear, Yulia, on why you do what you do. has that always been the case? Is that something you've developed over the years?
Well, I think there's an element of personal growth, yes.
Sure.
a lot of the career is ego driven. I guess the path that you take. Being a female is also not so easy in science. That's a completely different topic altogether. But there's, like you said, there's many hats. I'm a parent. I have to fulfill certain expectations with the schools, etc. Mm-hmm. So I also have my other hobbies.
Yeah.
That I like to explore. So it's learning how to balance things as well, being in balance and learning yourself, knowing when I'm unwell and taking the time. So it could be physical or mental health. So this is something that is quite important, is kind of understanding when your thought patterns become toxic and taking the time to recover and kind of get to a comfortable place again so you can go back to the lab and perform really well.
Yeah.
Because my experiments work better when I'm happy.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. And it's interesting to think about, I suppose, because I don't think this is limited to scientists. I think this is true across all professions, but certainly we do see it in science that kind of there's almost a sort of perspective where scientists try to disassociate themselves from between being a scientist and being a person. It's almost like the two things shouldn't be the same.
Yeah.
But like you say, you know, if you're unwell or if you're unhappy or if you're, you know, if you have other commitments, it's important to have other commitments. You've got to do something else with your time as well. Those all go into you doing your job well. And as far as I'm aware, it's still the case that every scientist is a person.
It's all consuming sometimes. I've noticed it with Simon that you're headed for a burnout when all you can think about is the experiments that are on the deck right now. So it's really knowing when to chill and really take the breaks because we have our own lab and we can pop in anytime.
Yes.
We tend to do it a bit too much.
I was going to say there's two sides to that sort of convenience, isn't there?
So yeah, being a scientist can be all consuming.
Mm.
Your personality just becomes, you know, science.
Yes.
But yeah, I try to balance myself. And I went to a Renaissance fair last weekend.
Wow.
Yes, I wanted to experience that. And England is so full of all of these kind of interesting historical things. And
yes.
Exploring it is fun.
I haven't done a Renaissance fair yet. I'll have to put that one on the list.
But yeah, it was people really committed to their costumes. Amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, perhaps not the best, as you say, perhaps not the best weather for some of those costumes either, I imagine.
But yeah.
We will be releasing this a little later in the year, but it's the 13th of July as we're recording this, and it's, I believe, 28 degrees outside, so the weekend is
going to be hot as well.
So looping right back around, Yulia, we've covered a lot of ground there, but looping right back around to Coding Bio, tell us a bit about what's next, what you've got planned, what the near future looks like for you.
For Coding Bio, we would like to see our CARs in patients.
Mm-hmm.
That's the next stage. And we are not in the business of becoming a clinical company just yet, because it requires a lot more funding. But we are working on collaborating with companies that will be taking the molecules into patients.
Yes.
And in fact, Carl June's company is very curious about our process. So we've been chatting with him, which is a great honor.
Mm.
Pioneer in the field is curious about what we're doing. So this is where we see ourselves going.
Yes.
Because that would be a great validation for what we're doing. Beyond that, we would like to see growth, but in a very organic way.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't want my job to become pure management of my staff.
Sure.
Because I still like to play.
Yeah, of course.
It's a fine balance because, bringing the molecules forward and being able to do it effectively with just two people is a little bit too difficult. So, yeah.
No, absolutely. And there are different ways to grow, right? I mean, we see more and more virtual companies and we see more and more companies that rely on outsourced support and things like that. And
yeah,
there's a few different, there's a few more ways than there used to be to make that sort of progress.
Yeah. I one of our main things is being fiscally efficient. So we're trying to make our cars as cheaply as possible.
Okay.
And so it's been working so far.
Yes.
So yeah, that's that. If we're going to be doing it cheaply, we have to kind of do it ourselves because CROs are expensive.
True. Well, I think what you have is fascinating. It seems like it's getting traction. I think the vision of it beyond just cars in themselves are exciting, but the vision of it beyond that is also very exciting. We wish you the best of luck with it, Julia. Thanks for joining us on Careers in Discovery, and don't forget to subscribe for more insight into the world of drug discovery and R&D. Do take a look at our sponsors, Singular Talent, and their mission to make hiring better for companies and individuals in drug discovery and R&D. You can find them at www.singulartalent.io. See you next time.